Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. More Americans have died from the coronavirus pandemic these past few months of 2020 than were killed in the Vietnam War during the long decade plus of U.S. intervention in Vietnam Civil War from essentially 1961 to 1975. That war ended today, 45 years ago, on April 30th, 1975. Quite like the Confederate States of America dissolved into Never Never Land 110 years earlier in April 1865, when the Union won the American Civil War, the U.S. invented Republic of South Vietnam was banished to the dustbin of history when the North similarly defeated the South in Vietnam Civil War, which was also in an April. By then, the light at the end of the tunnel had long gone out for the USA, which was wrapped in civil dispute over the war. The end of the Vietnam War was anticlimactic to the American survivors who had left their hearts and minds in the paddies and jungles of Vietnam. A few years earlier, with the mass withdrawal of American military forces from Vietnam, someone wrote on a Saigon wall, "Will the last person to leave turn out the light at the end of the tunnel?" Nearly 60,000 Americans had been killed in the war, and as many or more than 300,000 wounded. Subsequent suicides by Vietnam veterans have not been counted or considered as war-related. On today's anniversary program, I read a revised article I wrote and rewrote and have rewritten again, Post-Vietnam Syndrome, and a personal note. I spent a year in Vietnam, 1966-67, as a USMC combat correspondent with infantry and reconnaissance in what was designated as I Corps, up near the DMZ. A friend I was in Vietnam with later became a USMC officer and helped evacuate the American embassy in Saigon at the end in April 1975. Post-Vietnam Syndrome. There probably will be no grand 50th anniversaries for the Vietnam War or for any of its battles, as for Gettysburg in July 1913, or even 75th anniversaries, as for the D-Day Normandy landings of 1944, which were commemorated last year. The end of the Civil War in 1865 and World War II in 1945 are vividly remembered and eulogized. This May 8th is Victory in Europe Day 75. Dates in August and September commemorate the defeat of Japan and the atomic bomb that same year of 1945. The end of the Vietnam War was something of a duality: America's withdrawal in the early 1970s and the fall of Saigon today in 1975. Civil War veterans were honored until the last of them, an ancient Confederate, died in 1959. World War II veterans, though often negligently regarded in the post-war, experienced a golden anniversary comeback, resplendent with enthusiasm as well as apologetic respect and genuflection for saving freedom. World War I veterans, who fought the war to end all wars, were honored for saving the world for democracy. Vietnam veterans do not claim to have saved anything. As with Korean War veterans, their war was nebulous, though deadly and costly. Both wars were eruptions along a fault line of polarity that was otherwise a global Cold War. In themselves, the wars in Korea and Vietnam meant little except to the hard luck expendable victims who were sacrificed for world dominance. Korea and Vietnam were civil wars within artificially subdivided nations and cultures, irrespective of political ideological conflict. Their proclaimed issues and superpower influences and interventions in both wars were muddled and unconvincing. World War II, in retrospect, illumines the screen of modern memory with a major illusion of sharply imagined purpose. A war of clear-cut right and wrong, freedom assailed by tyranny. In the future, both world wars of the 20th century will probably be merged into a single suicidal struggle for European hegemony, though not necessarily colonial supremacy. The combined wars, only 20 years apart, long enough to seed and grow a second generation of combatants, bankrupted Europe's global dominance, victors as well as losers. World power shifted to two diametrically opposed superpowers that had risen from the European periphery and grasped for Alexandrine Empire over Europe's political corpse, while simultaneously devising desperate strategies to survive and possibly surmount the scorpion stings of the other. Korea and Vietnam were low-stakes wars, more bluff than real cards, though hundreds of thousands of real persons perished and anonymous millions were handicapped for life, psychologically as well as physically. Vietnam veterans are pitied more as fools or for pathological tendencies than they are honored in the old traditional manner. Raised voices insist Vietnam veterans are either heroes and patriots or butchers and baby killers. Vietnam veterans might respond that almost every day they committed acts deserving medals as well as courts martials. The Vietnam War was ambiguous and off-center. Combat veterans were discouraged from revealing themselves if they wished to reintegrate into the hostile yet continually oblivious society they attempted to defend in a far-off part of the world that was claimed to be of strategic as well as ideological necessity to the United States. Soon enough, the propaganda was revealed as sham, yet very few actively reflected the growing public disaffection with the war. The larger population preferred to distance itself through self-hypnotic, also drug-induced, numbness, and disavowed an anti-war movement that publicly defied authority to protest the continued murder and, as a number of people began to believe, echo genocide of Vietnamese life and culture. A small but significant number of Vietnam veterans organized to stop the war, which immediately triggered a pro-war military and political jihad. Neither pro-war or anti-war initially accepted or acknowledged the Vietnam veterans against the war. The anti-war people accused the veterans of indiscriminate murder and of being pro-fascist personalities. The right wing, particularly such established veterans groups as the American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars, assailed the VVAW as traitors and or Vietnam impersonators. Enmity between American veterans of Vietnam and Vietnamese people remains. Fortunately, it decreases with time, to the particular benefit of the many thousands of Vietnamese immigrants to the USA, though their first years in this country were met with more than usual hostility toward immigrants and refugees, despite the fact most were our Vietnamese. Perhaps while we are still alive, American and Vietnamese veterans of the Long War might reconcile, as did Civil War veterans at Gettysburg 50 years after they fought each other there. The reunion of the old veterans on the hardest-fought battlefield of their war was truly a reconciliation, despite flares of bitter animosity. A civil war is, after all, a family dispute, its antipathy almost eternal, its wounds long to heal, and sometimes never. A century later, American soldiers in Vietnam carried Confederate flags, and they were not kidding. Reenactment of Pickett's charge by its last living survivors was the most moving moment of the Gettysburg reunion. The ancient rebels marched toward the old Yankees at the Stonewall on Cemetery Ridge, just as they had half a century earlier. The charging former rebels broke into a ragged rebel yell as they came up to the wall they were unable to breach 50 years before. "It was then," wrote an observer, "after half a century of silence, that the Yankees, unable to restrain themselves longer, burst from behind the stone wall and flung themselves upon their former enemies, not in mortal combat, but reunited in brotherly love and affection, quote unquote. 56 years ago, in August 1964, on the 50th anniversary of the beginning of World War I, Vietnam exploded from a backwater war when North Vietnamese gunboats allegedly attacked two American destroyers in the Tonkin Gulf. On August 17th that year, President Lyndon Johnson pushed his Tonkin resolution to bomb the North and expand involvement in the South through the U.S. Senate. Only two senators dissented, Wayne Morse from Oregon and Ernest Gruening of Alaska. 11 years later, the nation escaped Vietnam aboard evacuation helicopters. Will the last person to leave turn out the light at the end of the tunnel? A departing soldier wrote on a Saigon wall. Vietnam remains contradictory, at once troubling and unsettled in the American psyche, yet dimming into historical oblivion, overshadowed by the larger afterglow of World War II on the receding horizon. The United States seems to regard Vietnam as only an old war and a distasteful part of its past, rather than as a separate nation and people, currently, as always, making its own history. The U.S. stubbornly delayed reconciliation with Vietnam, acting like an unforgiving, humiliated child. The U.S. has allies and trading partners who were once enemies and fought to the death, but are presumably forgiven because they lost their wars, unlike the Asian mouse that roared. Victory, however, has not brought much joy or prosperity to Vietnam. It is an impoverished country, abandoned by allies, spurned by former enemies. Three generations of war bankrupted and exhausted Vietnam. War with the Japanese, war with France, war with the United States. Yet, only 4 years after defeating the U.S. and dismantling its corrupt and vastly unpopular client regime in Saigon, a quarter of a century after independence from France, Vietnam was forced into a war with its ancient nemesis and sometime ally, China, one of a series of wars stretching over centuries since the Little Dragon's successful revolt against 1,000 years of the Celestial Kingdom's yoke. Vietnam also intervened in the cultural genocide of Cambodia by its new Khmer Rouge rulers, who murdered at least 1 million fellow citizens. Ultimately, Vietnam's occupation of Cambodia, severely criticized even among the communist bloc, was unable to survive the collapse of its foremost ally, the USSR. Russian communism disincorporated from its own contradictions, and the Vietnamese adaptation of Marxist-Leninism by the late great national hero, Nguyen Ai Quoc, Aka Ho Chi Minh, was almost immediately crippled. It had never been particularly strong, threadbare, and bled out by the immense effort to win power. 30 years of incessant warfare to oust colonial powers, which was also a spiritually enervating and unremittingly vicious civil war, culminated in national exhaustion and shock from which Vietnam has yet to recover. The U.S. has not recovered from its war with Vietnam. The pouty attitude the U.S. has shown Vietnam since the final embarrassing evacuation of Americans in 1975 is a direct consequence of this nation's own continuing internal conflict about the war, which might not end until the generation that fought the war and dissented against it are all dead. The most consistent obstacle to reconciliation has been the fate of Americans missing in Vietnam. Each attempt to bind old wounds was met with accusations that Vietnam kept U.S. prisoners of war for purposes of enslavement. Another opinion is that the U.S. government shamelessly pushed the MIA issue to disguise its unsalutary conduct in Vietnam. Every war has its MIAs, former enemies with whom this country trades and allies its strategic interests with, have never been forced to account for the usual thousands whose identities as well as presence disappear in every war. The U.S. insistence that all American MIAs be accounted for before normal relations with Vietnam might be countered with a request for equal endeavor in providing names to families of North Vietnamese soldiers and Viet Cong guerrillas who suffered the same grief at not knowing the fates of fathers, husbands, brothers, and sons, wives, mothers, sisters, and daughters, not to mention the identities of millions of civilians who were annihilated by both sides of the war. Accounting for Vietnamese MIAs, of which there are perhaps 50,000 or more, is impossible because the U.S. seldom bothered with name-taking. Yet it was expected Vietnam provide for every missing American. However much Americans might despise the political creed that rules Vietnam, it is difficult to not admire the courage and determination of the Vietnamese to win national independence. Perhaps that is what hampered this country's readiness to embrace its former enemy, as it has so often embraced other enemies once the wars are over. The Vietnamese foe, especially the Viet Cong, acted out the personal sketches of revolutionary heroism that Americans imagined for themselves. In contrast, the U.S. descended upon Vietnam as a massive mechanical juggernaut of command and control, which was generally resented by most Vietnamese. Some fought back in the manner America's hallowed ancestors rebelled against superpower England. The mutual taints of communism and Orientalism have acted as barriers to sympathetic recognition in the USA, yet the opposition anti-war movement extolled the comparisons of Viet Cong with the nation's own revolutionary Minutemen. A large number of Vietnam veterans wish to accomplish a personal reconciliation with Vietnam, and many have visited as tourists over the years. Many disagree that the U.S. owes an apology to Vietnam for making war in their country as a counterbalance to Soviet Chinese power, though continuing antipathy toward Vietnamese is entirely the result of confronting them in their home country, not unlike the adage that sharks only attack humans who intrude into their habitat. Looking up old enemies is a cathartic act, necessary for former combatants to develop a holistic perspective of a war. After all, in the final analysis, wrote a Vietnam veteran, no one really understands soldiers, be they friend or foe, as well as other soldiers. And the Vietnam soldiers are growing old. Soon they will be this nation's most aged veterans, following the exit of the Korean vets. The monument to the Vietnam War in Washington, D.C. is what a war memorial should be, a measure of its cost. The wall of names of Americans killed in Vietnam is a tribute to them from those who fought beside them and survived. A second wall should be set alongside, containing the names of all Viet Cong and North Vietnamese soldiers who died in the war, and both walls surrounded by a wall listing the names of every Vietnamese, Cambodian, and Laotian man, woman, and child who were not combatants, but were killed because they were the water the killer fish swam in, to paraphrase Mao's famous metaphor that the people were the sea to be fought over. Perhaps a special monument might be erected with the names of the murdered dead of My Lai by Americans and Way by North Vietnamese, to serve as a warning that the only enemy is the malevolence we humans feel toward each other. And as epilogue, a final personal note. I was at the Vietnam Memorial when it was dedicated on Armistice Day 1982 in Washington, D.C. The names of the American dead occupied the black marble wall chronologically by the days of their deaths in alphabetical order. I purchased a large book the size of a small city's phone book. It contained the names of the 55,000 dead engraved on the wall, and where each was located, which included a few friends I last saw wrapped in ponchos and tossed aboard medevac helicopters a decade and a half earlier. I left D.C. with my friends from Oregon, one of whom was an Army Vietnam vet, Stephen Carey. We drove through Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Nebraska, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, and Oregon, reaching home in Cannon Beach 5 days later. We stopped every night at motels or the homes of friends or relatives, and each day we made several stops for food, gas, and just to get out and stretch. On the back window of our small truck was a Vietnam Veterans of America sticker, the group that built and dedicated the Vietnam War. Everywhere we stopped, people noticed the sticker, and almost everyone was related or had known men who were killed in Vietnam. Everywhere we stopped, I opened the Book of the American Dead and found the names people wished to see. Many of them ran their fingers across the written names, as had most of us the carved names of friends on the wall. In this manner, we crossed the continent. By the time we reached the Pacific coast, the American Book of the Dead was as well thumbed as a phone book in a public booth. Until then, I had not really understood the personal impact of Vietnam on America's heart. Each time I opened the book, I felt I was performing a ritual of immense, unrecognized grief. And that was in tribute to the end of the Vietnam War today, in 1975. And now another day, tomorrow, May Day, which is going to be different from most May Days we've had. I simply call it, and I wrote it, by the way, one of my perennial May Days that I do every year, May Day 2020. A call for rebellion, a call for change, a call for help. May Day, the ancient celebration of spring, the festival of rebirth. May Day is celebrated all over the world in every culture and kitchen. For many, it is Labor Day in honor of the anonymous billions who break their backs or wear out their nerves for their daily bread. It is the symbol of seeding the earth in hope of a good harvest to ease the dreadful hunger that stalks the human race. May Day is also a day of revolution, a charge against history that demands sweeping changes among the world's societies. This claim usually originates from compassion and the perception that there is no excuse for anyone to go hungry, be without shelter, or denied adequate health and medical care. It is the demand for freedom and respect for all the world's people. The world situation eludes idealists and optimists. The balance of wealth and distribution of resources is persistently unequal, which intensifies the gross disparity between rich and poor. Millions are out of work. Millions more die from famine and disease. It is not a good season for optimism. Oppression and tyranny infect the world's governments. Hatred and intolerance are legitimized into rule. World leaders move savagely against their own peoples and their neighbors. The future blows a sour breath at the discomposed present. Humanity's probable proximity to extinction is not from any single cause or combination of intrinsic calamities, but instead a caustic unwillingness to change direction. Bipolar dogmata might be considered a defining source of our strident paralysis. Look up at the sky on May Day and not be too surprised to see four apocalyptic horsemen riding the jet stream. The entire planet is contaminated with plague, a near collapse of human civilization by a festering, pernicious, ancient enemy, a virulent virus that invisibly contaminates the very air we breathe and has swiftly spread across the world like a poison wind. The unseen malignance is regerminated by human breath and touch. We are the mortally contaminated carriers of the biocidal virus, which flits among us with the feathery overture of agonizing death. Each of us is a twain of malignancy drowning in a viral ocean of oxygenated air. Each of us is literally an infectious germ. And we are not helped by the more specious of our species, who carelessly or willfully spread the volatile contagion through deliberate neglect or feverish hindrance. We Americans are especially cursed by our own consumptive cupidity, reconfigured as sacred constitutional rights and privileges. Particularly unfortunate, rather than a Lincoln, or Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, or the combined intelligent compassion of the Obamas, the immediate predecessors who helped curb a previous epidemic, the USA is perniciously afflicted with a one-man plague of a president, a personally virulent warp of blithering mendacity, malevolent narcissism, and gross stupidity. who publicly espoused injections of bleach as a ballyhooed cure for coronavirus infection. Our Trumpian pseudo-monarch gazes lovingly into pools of TV monitors and irresponsibly spews reels of bilious misinformation about everything, which, in the instance of plague mongering, is life-threatening, though he claims he is not responsible for what he says or that he is simply being satiric. Confronted with his own lethal inefficiency and pompous lack of empathy for the sick and dying, Trump gets all tangled up in his lies and distortions like a tethered goat in a briar swamp, bleating angrily and loudly at his detractors, whom he disparages as fakes and accuses of disloyalty, even treachery, foisting his own abominable behavior upon his critics as though they are at fault and culpable. May Day 2020 is indeed a genuine call for help and change, perhaps even rebellion. America's best hope of survival and recovery from this nightmarish pandemic pandemonium might well be that Trump is infected through his own narcissistic pathologically of inviolability, or perhaps more appropriately, infects himself with one of his toxic nostrums. Dispense with Pence and pass the baton to Pelosi so that we might have a chance to preserve life, liberty, and justice against plutocratic avarice and the unfair injustice of inequality in all its distorted disguises. We could use a good and wise mom to help guide us through disease, death, and despair. Otherwise, we are shackled to the ridiculously hideous ordure of Donald Trump and his mob of slavering Morlocks and spurious hoaxers. Usually on May Day, in even the worst of times, people dance in hope around a maypole. Not this year. This is Michael McCusker. Happy May Day.